It's me again, Hank the Cow Dog. Slim's house was cold and also a terrible mess, and I haven't gotten to the part about the ghost yet. There's a reason for that. A guy can't get his entire story into the first paragraph, no matter how hard he tries. So you'll just have to be patient. I'll get to the part about the ghosts as soon as I can. And when I do, you'll probably wish I hadn't. What we've got cooking here is one of the scariest stories of my entire career, mainly because it involves a ghost. I didn't think I believed in ghosts. But as you'll soon see, the ghost we encountered didn't really care whether I believed in him or not. So there you are. It all began, mysteriously enough, at the beginning. And I happen to know the exact time it began, around 6 o'clock on the evening of October the 30th. Drover and I had been making a routine patrol around the western quadrant of ranch headquarters when all at once we encountered Pete the Barn Cat down at the calf shed. There was nothing particular mysterious about that because the calf shed was one of his favorite loafing spots. He had several favorite loafing spots. He loved loafing above everything else except himself. Have I ever mentioned that I don't like cats? I don't like cats. Pete in particular. So when I saw him primping and preening himself there by the calf shed, I slipped up behind him, said, "Roof!" real loud, and gave him a good scare. I love it. He turned wrong side out, hissed, and gave out his usual "Rear!" and climbed the nearest post. "Sorry, cat, but we don't allow loafing or loitering on this outfit. If you'd been taking care of the mouse problems, I wouldn't have had to do that." He glared down at me with his big cat eyes.
"Oh, it's only Hanky."
"Yeah, and Drover."
"I thought maybe it was a ghost."
"A ghost? Not likely, cat. I run a tight ship here, and I don't allow ghosts on my ranch."
"Oh, really? Did you know that tomorrow night is Halloween?"
"No, I didn't know that. Now ask me if I care."
"All right. Do you care?"
"Not even a little bit. But for the sake of argument, what is Halloween?"
Pete moved off the post and parked himself on the top board of the fence. Funny how a cat can do that.
"Halloween is the scariest night of the year. It's the night when all the ghosts and goblins come out."
"Oh, my gosh,"
said Mr. Scared of His Own Shadow.
"I don't think I'll like that."
"Quiet, Drover. I'll handle this. For your information, Kitty, we don't observe Halloween on this ranch. And if you run into any gobs or ghostlins, you might tell them the same thing."
"It's ghosts or goblins."
I stared at him. "What?"
"I said ghosts or goblins."
"Yes? Is that supposed to mean something?"
"You said gobs or ghostlins."
"I did not."
"Did too. I heard you."
"And so did I, Hanky. You said gobs or ghostlins. But no matter what you call them, they'll be out tomorrow night because tomorrow night is Halloween, and you can't stop it from being Halloween."
"Oh, yeah? I said there will be no Halloween on this ranch, and there will be no Halloween on this ranch, period."
"Yes, there will, Hanky, because Halloween is already on the calendar."
"No, no, it isn't, Kitty Kitty, because we don't believe in calendars, ghosts, goblins, or Halloweens. And as long as I'm in charge of ranch security, what I believe is the definition of what is. Any more questions?"
The cat smirked down at me and twitched his tail.
"When you see the ghosts and goblins tomorrow night, remember these words."
"Huh?" I turned to Drover. "What did he just say?"
"I don't know."
"What did you just say?"
"I said..."
I must have had some wax in my ear. Couldn't make a lick of sense out of what that cat was saying. "What?"
"Come a little closer, and I'll say it one more time."
I hopped my front paws up on the fence and... You know what that sneaking no-good counterfeit...
He slapped me across the nose with his claws, stung like fire, brought tears to my eyes, and before I could hamburgerize him, he had vanished. Grover was staring up at me.
What did he say, Hank?
He said, "Shut your little trap and get back to work, you nincompoop. You've just been duped by the cat."
That sounds like something you might say.
I just did.
I thought maybe you did. But what about hollering?
It's been canceled.
Oh, good. Are the ghosts canceled, too?
That's correct. Come on, Drover. We've used up our allotment of time for your bungling, and now we've got work to do. We headed east out of the front lot and into the saddle lot and ran into Slim. He had just finished his chores and was closing up the medicine shed for the night. Drover and I fell in step beside him and escorted him to his pickup, even though my nose still hurt. He lived in a little hired man's house down by the creek. Slim did, not my nose. My nose lived on my face. And he was fixing to drive home for the night. The sun was going down in the, well, in the west, of course, and a chill was beginning to rise from the ground. Slim blew on his hands and rubbed his arms and looked down at us. "Why don't you boys come home with me tonight? I need some company, and I'll let you stay inside." Stay inside? Like your ordinary pampered house mutts? No way. In the security business, we've got to be just a little... Oh, what the heck, one night in a nice warm house. We hopped into the pickup and headed down the creek. After all, Slim needed some company. He was lonesome and... Okay, we pulled up beside the house after a bone-chilling ride in the back of Slim's pickup. Grover and I were near frozen, yet somehow we mustered the energy to leap out of the pickup and make a lightning dash for the front door. We were shivering, see, and ready to begin our evening of selfless volunteer work around a nice, warm, wood-burning stove. Slim pushed open the door, and we raced inside. Grover cheated and got there first. When I arrived, he had seated himself in front of the wood stove. I went over and joined him, although sitting in front of the stove didn't do either of us any good because the fire had gone out. Between shivers, Drover looked around the living room and said,
"Gosh, I wonder what happened to this place."
It was a mess. "I'm not sure, Drover. Either a train wreck or a tornado." Slim came over and dropped an armload of wood beside the stove, pitched his coat over the back of the nearest chair, opened up the stove, shoveled some ashes into the ash bucket, made a little teepee out of kindling wood, and started wadding up newspapers and pitching them inside. Then he lit a match, and before long the stove was blazing and the chimney was roaring. He closed the door and held his hands over the stove. "There, now we've got us a fire." He walked into the kitchen and built himself a sardine and ketchup sandwich for supper, and I, being the senior member of the crew, took the best spot right in front of the stove. Say, it was really roaring and kicking out the heat now. Felt wonderful. Sent warm, delicious waves up my backbone and out to the end of my tail. My eyes began to droop, and I entered into a state of near-perfect contentment until Drover broke the spell.
"Hank, do you smell something?"
"Yes, sardines."
"Do they have kind of a burned smell?"
"Negative. Sardines are a species of fish, son, which explains why they have a fishy odor."
"That's funny. I thought I smelled burned hair."
"Impossible. Sardines have neither hair nor fur nor whiskers. Catfish have whiskers, but catfish don't come in a sardine can, so there you are."
"Well, maybe so, but I could swear..."
"Swearing and cursing will never get you anywhere, Grover. You'd be much better off learning to control that temper of yours." I returned to my dreamy state. It was so wonderful I can hardly describe it. My body had become a battleground as the knights of warmth chased the wicked demons of cold down my spine, out to my legs and feet, and... My dreams were interrupted by Slim's voice. "Hank, for crying out loud, your hair's on fire." "Huh?" Someone was slapping me on the back, and all at once I smelled... well, burned hair or something very close to it. And there was Slim. Somehow my hair had... "Hank, you dodo, get back from that stove before you burn my house down." My hair is very thick, you see, and Sometimes it's hard to feel. I still say that sardines don't have... But as a precaution, I moved away from the stove. I turned to my assistant. We'd best keep our distance from this stove, Drover. It's hotter than you might think.
Did you catch on fire?
I wouldn't put it exactly that way, no.
I knew there was something fishy going on.
That was sardines, Drover, and I think we can drop the subject now. You were wrong, but at least you tried. Next time, try a little harder.
Oh, okay.
That took care of that. Yes, I know. We haven't gotten to the business about the ghost yet, but it will come. In this old life, one thing must follow another, just as one thing must precede another. It seems to work better that way. Slim had nibbled off about half his sandwich, and now he stuffed the other half into his mouth, filled her plumb up till his cheeks puffed out. He paced the floor in front of us, chewing his supper and wiping his hands on his jeans.
The boy will have to clean himself up.
Drover and I stared at him and twisted our heads at the same time. He chewed some more and swallowed the lump of sandwich that was so big it made his eyes bulge out.
The boy will have to clean this house up. My Petunia's coming over for Halloween supper, and I'd hate for her to think that I live this way all the time.
He ran a toothpick through his teeth and scowled.
I don't understand how this place gets in such a mess. I cleaned it up. July, I guess it was.
He shook his head, went back into the kitchen, and had a Twinkie for dessert. Drover turned to me.
What's a petunia?
A petunia is a variety of flower.
He's having a flower over for supper?
That's correct.
I'll be darned. What would you feed a flower?
Water and flower food, I suppose.
What would you talk about with a flower?
You'd talk about... You heard what he said. He's having a flower over for supper, and he wants to clean up the house because he doesn't want the flower to think he's a slob.
I didn't know flowers could think.
I glared at the runt. Flowers don't think, and they don't talk either. That's part of their charm. You might try it yourself sometime.
But I thought you said...
Never mind what I said. It's what I meant that matters. Now stop asking meaningless questions.
Oh, you mean...
Exactly. Dry up. He dried up for a whole 15 seconds. Then...
How do you reckon a petunia chews its...
Drover!
Food!
Shh! At last, silence. I curled up beside the fire and prepared myself for a nice, long, warm sleep in front of the stove. Not only did I not know how a petunia chewed its food, but I didn't care. That was Slim's problem. If he wanted to socialize with flowers, I just didn't give a rip, that's what I'm saying. I had just drifted off into a wonderful twitching dream about my one and only true love, the fair and lovely Miss Beulah, when I heard singing in the distance. I raised my head and glanced at Drover, who was curled up in a white furry ball and appeared to be fast asleep. Was that you? His head came up and one eye fell open.
Murgle Skiffer.
I said, was that you?
When?
Just a second ago.
Well, I don't know if it was me or not. What did I look like?
No, you don't understand. I thought I heard... Listen. We cocked our ears and listened. There it was again. Yes, it was singing, and it appeared to be coming from outside the house. Suddenly, the hair on my bris backled up. The hair on my back bristled up, I should say, and a growl came from deep inside my throat. I sprang to the north window, sniffed the curtains, and... I sneezed. They were very dusty, don't you see? But after sneezing a couple of times, I barked. Slim came out of the bathroom wearing a nightshirt that exposed his bony knees and skinny legs. He came over to the window, walking on crumpled-up toes because the floor was so cold.
What is it, Hank?
I barked again. Someone or something was out there in the night, prowling around and singing without permission. Slim narrowed his eyes and tugged on his chin whiskers and listened.
I don't hear anything.
He didn't hear?
Well, fellers, I could hear it plain as day. I hopped my front legs up on the windowsill and barked louder than ever. I mean, this was getting serious. We had trespassers out there in the night, and you know where I stand on the issue of trespassing. I don't allow it. Never have. I was all set to dive through the window, ready to, by George, take out glass and screen, the window frame, even part of the wall if necessary. I mean, I was stirred up. But Slim called me off. He started down the long, dark hall that led to the back bedroom. Come on, dogs. I got a job for you. Drover went streaking down the hall, and I followed. Funny thing about that house, the farther away from the stove we went, the colder it got. Slim's bedroom was about right for hanging meat. It was so cold back there, our breath made fog in the air. Slim turned on the light. He was hugging his arms by this time and standing on the sides of his feet, and his teeth were chattering. He pointed towards the bed, a bare mattress laid across squeaky springs and covered with two old quilts and a cowhide. He jerked the covers back and said, "Up, come on, dogs, jump up." Okay, if that's what he... We jumped up and he pulled the covers over on top of us. All at once it was very dark and very cold. Then we heard Slim's footsteps on the floor. It sounded as if they were heading back towards the living room. I heard Drover's voice in the darkness.
"Hank, I'm freezing. What are we doing under here?"
"I'm not sure at this point, but it probably has something to do with the noise we heard. Apparently Slim wants us to hide under here until something develops."
"I think I'm developing frostbite."
"I know what you mean, Drover. This may very well turn out to be the coldest bed I've experienced in my entire career."
"I think it's the coldest bed in the whole world."
My teeth were chattering so badly that I couldn't speak. For several minutes, we lay there shivering in the darkness, waiting for someone to make the next move. It was clear by this time that Slim had devised a clever trap for the trespassers. Yes, of course. It was an old trick, see? You hide your secret weapons, lure the villains into the house, and then, when they least expect it, you spring the trap on them. Pretty smart. We waited. My ears were perked. My entire body was poised for action. I heard footsteps coming down the hall. Someone was walking. No, someone was running towards the bedroom. "Get ready, Drover. I think this is it."
"I'm so cold.
Shh." The footsteps came closer and closer. Now they were in the bedroom. Someone switched off the lights, and then... I hate being used. It gives me a lousy feeling deep inside the inner receptacles of my mind. It makes me... Okay, here was the deal. Very simple. Slim put me and Drover into his cold bed so that we could warm it up for him. While we lay under the cover, shivering and fighting off frostbite, he had gone back to the living room and warmed his backside on the stove. That's why he'd been so anxious for us to go home with him. It had nothing whatsoever to do with lonesomeness or trespassers. If I'd known that... Oh, well. When he was sure we had preheated his bed, he came loping back into the room and jumped under the covers. Right off, I got a foot in the face. You know what he said? "Get that cold nose away from me." Well, there was a very good reason why my nose... It turned out to be a pretty rough night. Slim did everything in his sleep but sleep. He talked, he moaned, he thrashed, he snored, and most of all, he kicked. And then there was Drover's twitching and wheezing. Noisiest bed I ever slept in. Sometime in the middle of the night, I decided I'd had enough. I poked my head out of the covers and was about to go in search of a quieter place to sleep when all of a sudden, I perked my ears and listened. There it was again, that same eerie music coming from outside the house. Fellers, I didn't know who that was or why they were out there singing in the cold, but I never would have guessed that it might be a bunch of ghosts. Slim was a single man, don't you know? Sally Mae often referred to him as a dirty bachelor. Exactly what bachelor meant, I wasn't sure,
but I understood the dirty part. His house, for example. The next morning, he hopped out of bed and chunked up the stove. Then he came streaking back and crawled under the covers again. While he waited for the stove to warm up, he talked to me and Drover. We had poked our heads out from under the cowhide.
Boys, I hate to take radical action, but if Miss Viola was to see the place and the shape it's in, she might think I live this way all the time.
I looked at Drover and he looked at me.
Now, she don't like clutter, so we've got to move a few things around. And she don't like mice, so we'll have to do some whittling on the mouse population. You boys think you can handle it?
I barked and tried to whap my tail under the covers.
Slim had definitely picked the right dog for the mouse job. There wasn't a cat or dog in the country that could beat me at mousing when I really put my mind to it.
Well, we ain't getting any younger or better looking. Guess we'd better start cleaning the dadgum house.
He pulled on his clothes and boots, and we all went out and backed up to the stove. For half an hour or more, Slim stood in front of the stove, making sour faces at all the junk in the living room and wondering where he ought to begin. That was something to wonder about, all right. Shall I try to describe the house? Okay. Living room. 4 pairs of dirty socks, 2 undershirts, 3 towels, 1 pair of red long john underwear, 1 pair of jeans, 3 boots, 2 spurs, a pair of chaps, 2 saddle blankets, 2 catch ropes, 1 peg and string, and 1 old boot top that had been sewed at the bottom so's it could hold cow medicine. That was only the top layer. Beneath all that stuff was a 6-month supply of reading material. The Livestock Weekly, the Cattleman Magazine, Western Horseman, and the Ocotree County Herald. Coffee table. 3 cups partially filled with coffee, and one of them had 2 dead June bugs floating around on top. 4 empty pouches of Taylor's Pride chewing tobacco, a corncob pipe and a tin of Prince Albert's tobacco, an empty cracker box, an empty sardine can that had been used for an ashtray, and the wrappers from 3 Snickers candy bars, a bottle of 3-way cattle vaccine, a dehorning tube, and a wet rock, cracker crumbs and pipe ashes, 1 banana peel, and the core of an apple. Hanging on the knob of the closet door was a pair of striped boxer shorts. And spilling out of the closet was a saddle, a pair of shotgun chaps, 2 more boots, a pair of 5 buckle overshoes, and a sheep-lined coat. From my position in front of the stove, I couldn't see much of the kitchen. Just a sink pile full of dirty pots and dishes, a skillet of cold grease on the stove, and a sack of garbage sitting beside the back door. Oh, and on the kitchen table, 2 empty jelly jars, a jar of peanut butter, 1/2 a sack of bread, and more crumbs and jelly spills than you could count in an average ranch day. I've never been what you'd call a fuss budget, but even I could see that this place had gone to seed. Well, the minutes passed, then an hour, and still old Slim stood there in front of the stove, shaking his head and talking under his breath. Then, at last, he bit his lip and set his eyes in a hard squint.
I don't know what I'm going to do with all this junk, but dang it, I've got to do something. Come on, dogs. I'll move junk and you catch mice.
And with that, old Slim left the stove and charged into the middle of the mess. He went through that living room like a mowing machine. And fellers, mice were going every which direction, looking for a new home. In the first 30 minutes, me and Drover notched up 3 head apiece. And we only nailed the slow ones and the cripples. The rest of them got away. Saddle, boots, leggings, blankets, and ropes went flying into the closet. When it got so full that it wouldn't hold anything else, Slim pushed on the door until he got her shut. Then he opened up the stove and started pitching in all the newspapers and magazines. And 1 sock by mistake. He watched the sock burn up and said,
"Well, there's one I won't have to wash."
Next, he got a feed sack and went around the house gathering up all his dirty clothes. When he was done, he scratched his head and wondered aloud what he ought to do with the sack. He ended up putting in the back of his pickup. Then he turned to the kitchen mess. He washed 2 plates, 2 cups, 2 glasses, 2 knives and forks, and set them on the counter to dry. Then he got a cardboard box out of the shop and started filling it up with dirty dishes, pots, pans, and his coffee pot. When he had it crammed full, he opened the oven door, poked the box inside, and shut the door again. He was proud of that. I could tell because he winked at me and grinned. Well, it was afternoon by this time, and old Slim had worked himself down to a nubbin. he collapsed in the big easy chair beside the stove.
I need to rest my bones for a minute.
And he fell asleep.
So did we. I mean, all that cleanliness had just wore us out.
Next thing we knew, Slim's boots hit the floor and he jumped to his feet.
Holy smokes, it's 5 o'clock and we ain't done yet.
He grabbed the broom and started sweeping. I watched from my place in front of the stove.
First, he went through the living room and managed to stir up enough dust so that Drover's allergies started acting up on him.
Even I had a little trouble breathing.
Then he made his bed and scrubbed the bathtub until it turned white.
By George, that was a revelation to me. I'd always thought it was naturally grayish black. From there, he went to scrubbing on the toilet bowl. I happened to be standing in the door during this part of the deal.
He was on his knees in front of the pot, looking down into the water.
His hair had fallen down over his forehead. He filled his cheeks with air and let it out real slow.
Next time, I think we'll eat supper at her house. This pot work is for the birds.
By the time he'd finished with the pot, his face was showing the miles and the years. He reeled out his pocket watch and held it up in front of his face.
Gee, Monday Christmas, I should have started this a week ago.
He jumped up, tore off his shirt, washed under his arms, brushed his teeth, throwed some smell good on his cheeks, and ran into the bedroom. He changed his jeans and polished his boots and trotted down the hall to the kitchen. Drover and I had been watching from the door. When we saw him coming, we scrambled down the hall to keep from getting trampled.
Out of the way, you dogs, I'm running late.
He ran into the kitchen and started pulling things out of the icebox. He laid 10 weenies into the cold grease in the iron skillet. He saved his grease, see, and that way he never had to wash the skillet. And he put the skillet on the burner. Then he took a hunk of cheese, cut the mold off the outside, sliced it up, and laid cheese strips on top of the weenies. While the weenies were sizzling in the pan, he poked at them with a fork.
This is one of my special recipes, boys. Cowboy round steak. Won't old Viola be proud of us?
He opened a can of pork and beans and set it on the burner to warm. He seemed a little shocked when the paper label caught on fire and the beans boiled over on the stove. When he got his bean fire under control, he stood in front of the icebox door, staring inside and tugging on his chin whiskers.
She'll want a salad, I guess.
He pulled out a brown lump of something and turned it over in his hand. Oh, it was a head of lettuce. He put it back.
Maybe bread would be good enough.
He slammed the icebox door and went over to the dinner table. He opened up a plastic sack with 7 or 8 pieces of bread in it, pulled them out a piece at a time, scraped the mold off with a spoon, and laid them on a saucer. He glanced around the kitchen and smiled.
Meat, beans, and bread. That ought to be good enough for any human, don't you reckon?
I barked. Sounded pretty good to me. It was getting along towards dark by this time. Slim turned off the fire under the cowboy round steak, grabbed his coat and hat, and yelled,
"Come on, dogs, it's time to go pick up my petunia."
We dashed to the door and jumped into the back of his pickup, and off we went down the creek road to pick up Miss Viola. I might point out here that Slim wasn't actually having a flower for supper, as you might have thought. Now and then he referred to his lady friend as his petunia, don't you see? Just thought I ought to point that out. Miss Viola lived in an old two-story house, maybe 2-3 miles down the creek from Slim's place. You go east on the creek road, see, and then when it curves back to the south, that's her place off to the right. She lived there with her folks and a couple of smart-aleck dogs named Black and Jack. Black was the bigger of the two, and he was, well, black, of course. Jack was smaller, kind of a yellow-brown mutt. Neither one of them showed much class or breeding. First thing that happened when we pulled up in front of the house was that them two dogs came running out to meet us, barking their little heads off. When Slim stepped out, they sniffed his boots and followed him up to the porch. Then, when he went inside, they came loping back to the pickup and started giving me and Drover a hard time. Black said,
"I dare you to get out of that pickup."
And Jack said,
"Yeah, me too. That makes it a double dog dare."
Well, Drover, it appears that we've been challenged.
We have no choice but to get out.
Oh, I don't know. Seems to me...
Get out, Drover.
Okay.
We jumped down and faced the mutts. They growled and raised their hair and backed up a few steps. Then Black said...
You're in big trouble now, fella.
And Jack said...
Yeah, and you're gonna be sorry, and you'd better not take one more step or you'll really be sorry.
I grinned and took one more step. Behind me, Drover did the same. We waited to see what the mutts would do about it. I knew they wouldn't do anything, see? I mean, I'd run into their kind before, and very seldom did they ever... So it was kind of a surprise when Black stepped forward and barked in my face. Drover, did you see that?
No.
He barked in my face. That means we move into combat alert. Prepare yourself for some violence and bloodshed.
Maybe it was an accident.
Stay behind me and cover the rear. This situation is liable to get nasty before it gets any dirtier. I marched over to Black and went nose to nose. At close range, he appeared to be bigger than I'd thought. That didn't make any difference to me, of course, except that, well, he was a pretty big dog, is all I'm saying. Real big dog. Funny, he hadn't looked that big from a distance. And neither had Jack. They were both big dogs. You barked in my face.
Yeah.
I saw you, so don't try to deny it.
I ain't denying it.
You realize, of course, that I saw the whole thing.
Yeah.
If it was a mistake, well, we might consider a formal apology. Black curled his lip and showed his teeth.
It wasn't no mistake. I did it. I'm glad I did it. And if I had it all to do over again, I'd do it all over again.
I see. In that case, I have no choice but to turn this thing over to my assistant. Drover, tell him what happens now. Drover squeaked and his eyes crossed.
Who, me?
Tell him about your karate. Drover's a black belt in dog karate. The last time he got into a fight, he killed 3 dogs and a horse.
I did?
Go ahead, tell him the whole story. They might as well know what they're getting into. It was the biggest mess I ever saw. I mean, the place was just solid with blood and bones. Black and Jack traded glances. Then Black said,
I think you're bluffing.
Yeah, and so do I.
Do ya? All right, let's have a little demonstration. Drover, walk up to the front porch and show them how you break porch pillars in half with one kick.
One kick?
That's right, just one. Of course, you guys need to understand that the whole porch is liable to fall down. If that's okay...
Wait a minute.
That was Black. He wasn't grinning anymore.
It ain't okay to knock the porch down. We might get in trouble with the folks.
That's your problem. If Drover shows his stuff, something's gonna be destroyed. There's no way around it. They went into a huddle, and while they whispered, I threw a glance towards the house. Slim and the young lady had come out on the porch and were talking to Viola's parents. I sure wished they'd hurry. This deal showed signs of getting out of hand. I guess Drover was feeling insecure.
Hank, I hate to tell you this. I know you'll be disappointed, but I don't think I can do all those things you said. And I don't remember killing 3 dogs and a horse.
Shh, of course you don't. Can't you see what I'm doing?
Yeah, you're fixing to get me killed.
I'm running a bluff, stalling for time.
Oh, gee, that's what they said they thought you were doing. How can you run a bluff when everyone knows you're bluffing?
They're not sure, Drover. Can you see the indecision in their eyes?
I see murder in their eyes.
No, that's indecision. Now listen, we've got a bluff going on, and we have to play it out. Just say your lines and try to look mean. And remember, as long as you're bluffing, nothing is real, and no one will get hurt.
No, just bluff, huh? Well, I guess I can try.
I glanced over towards the porch again, and the next thing I knew, Drover had walked up to Black and whopped him across the nose.
There's for nothing, mister. Now do something and see what happens.
Black and Jack stared at him. In disbelief, I would say, which is pretty muchly the way I stared at him, too. Black started growling, and Jack started laughing.
He hit you on the nose.
You know what Drover did then? He hit Jack on the nose.
What are you laughing at, smarty pants?
Drover,
He looked back at me and grinned.
Am I doing all right, Hank?
Judging from the dark scowls on the faces of the two thugs he just slapped, I calculated that the answer was no. They stood up, rolled their shoulders, and surrounded him. Black spoke first.
You know what happened to the last dog that slapped me?
No, what happened to him?
He spent 3 weeks in the vet clinic.
Oh, you're just bluffing. You can't fool me.
Drover! At last, I caught his eye and shook my head. I had to let him know that those guys weren't bluffing. It didn't work. The silly grin remained. At that moment, Black and Jack tuned up and started growling. And fellers, I'm talking about the real thing. They sounded like a couple of semi-trucks going up a long hill. At last, the awful truth began to penetrate Drover's tiny brain. His grin slipped a few notches. He turned his eyes on Black's big white teeth.
Nothing's real when you're...
He looked at me.
Hank, are you sure they're bluffing?
I gave my head a shake.
Oh my gosh, that means that
I gave my head a nod. And right then, before my eyes, Drover fainted the little. I could have wrung his... Black and Jack lifted their eyes to me. Black flashed a wicked grin.
Karate, huh? Tears down porches, huh?
Well, Drover has a heart condition, see, and sometimes... They were moving towards me. Now, hold on, guys. I'm sure we can talk this. Tell you what, if you'd like to... I think what we have here is a simple breakdown, and... They jumped into the middle of me, and the wreck was on. You know what? Those were two of the biggest dogs I'd ever seen in my entire life. And you talk about bite and scratch and kick. Holy smokes, they were in the process of taking me apart, piece by piece and leg by leg, when all at once Slim and Miss Viola came rushing out. He grabbed Black and she grabbed Jack, and they pulled him off. Miss Viola was pretty well steamed up.
Jackie, you naughty dog, what in the world do you think you're doing? And Blackie, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
It was then that she saw Mr. Faint When You Need Him Most lying in the middle of the driveway. She gave a cry,
ooh,
and ran to him and gathered him up in her arms. As though by magic, he let out a groan.
Oh, my leg!
Miss Viola marched over to her two dogs. By this time, they were sitting beside the yard gate with their heads hung low and their tails tapping the ground.
You big bully, see what you've done? Beating up Slim's poor little white dog, and there here is our guest. I'm so embarrassed.
Well, Miss Viola laid down some pretty stern messages to her dogs. Her folks had come down to the porch by this time, and they were shaking their heads and making apologies to Slim. While they were busy with that, I decided this would be a good time for me to even the score and put the whole thing into its proper prospectus. I walked over to the gate, lifted my leg, and blasted the gatepost. Pretty slick maneuver, if you ask me. See, Blackie and Jackie couldn't... Only problem was that Slim eased around and booted me in the ribs. Didn't make any sense to me. I mean, I was making points for our side, right? Nevertheless, he booted me in the ribs. Hurt, too, and said, Hank, get in the pickup. Well, to wrap this thing up, I loaded myself into the back of the pickup while Slim opened the door for Miss Viola. Mr. Half-Stepper got to ride up front, of course, and Miss Viola fussed over him all the way back to Slim's place. But the important point to remember in all this is that I had protected the reputation of our ranch and had scored points against a dangerous adversary. Did Slim appreciate any of this? I'm not sure that he did, because as he was opening his door to get in, he looked back at me and said, I ain't ever taking you on a date with me again, dog. Makes you wonder, don't it? In our part of the world, when the sun goes down in October, it gets cold. And when you're riding in the back of a pickup, it's colder yet. By the time we made it back to Slim's place, I was near froze. Now, I had a suspicion that Slim planned to leave me outside. Not because I'd done anything wrong, don't you see, but because I had gotten myself involved in an incident with Miss Viola's hoodlum dogs, and I want to emphasize that they had started the whole thing. Point is, I wanted to spend a quiet evening in front of the stove, so when Slim opened the front door for Miss Viola, I sort of slithered past her legs and made a dash for the stove, hoping that maybe Slim wouldn't...
Hank, get out of here. We've got a lady in the house.
Miss Viola came inside, holding the invalid in her arms. I established eye contact with her right away, gave her my most pitiful look, and whapped my tail against the hearth. She had a good, honest face, friendly eyes, and a nice smile. I had a feeling that she liked dogs and that we could do business together. I mean, here was a good old country gal who had grown up around dogs.
Slim, he's not going to bother me if you let him stay inside. He can't be any worse than those two dogs of mine.
See, I had her pegged. Me and Miss Viola were going to get along just fine. Slim chewed on his upper lip and frowned at me. Well,
it's awfully cold outside. If I were a dog, I'd want to be in here by the stove.
Well, all right. He came over to the stove and pointed a bony finger at my face.
You mess up one more time and I'll pitch you out of here in a New York minute. You got that?
Yes, sir. No more messing up for me, even though I hadn't messed up the first time. While Slim was busy with me, Miss Viola removed her coat and headed for the closet door. Old Slim's eyes got big and he went dancing across the room.
Whoa now, Miss Viola, you better not.
Too late. She twisted the knob, the door flew open, and she came within an inch of getting buried under an avalanche of saddles, blankets, boots, and so forth. She stared at all the stuff. Slim stared at it too. His face got a little red around the edges, and he tried to smile.
That's my junk closet.
Oh!
Let's put your coat on the chair.
He took her coat, and then she took off her hat. It was a black hat with red things around the crown. They might have been grapes, cherries, wild plums, or small tomatoes. Ordinarily, I would have sniffed it out because it seemed a little peculiar to me. Why would anyone decorate a perfectly good hat with vegetables? But under the terms of my probation, I didn't dare leave the stove. Wild horses couldn't have dragged me away from that stove. So the mystery of the vegetables on the hat remained a mystery. All I could figure was that Miss Viola had brought some extra food, just in case what Slim fed her wasn't fit to eat. Not a bad idea, actually. Miss Viola brought the invalid over to the hearth and set him down beside me. She rubbed him behind the ears and said,
"There, I think you'll be all right now."
Then she turned and went into the kitchen where Slim was putting the grub together. I turned to Drover and gave him a withering glare. "I can't believe you did what you did."
"What did I do?"
"First off, you got those hoodlum dogs so stirred up they were ready to kill somebody."
"I was only bluffing. That's what you said to do."
"And then when you had them tuned up for murder and mayhem, you took the chicken's way out and fainted."
"Well, I have these spells."
"For that performance, Drover, you win the chicken award of the month."
"Gosh, thanks, Hank."
"Don't thank me. It's no honor. It's a disgrace, and I must warn you that this will go into your dossier."
"Oh, darn. But it sure was nice riding home with Miss Viola. Makes a guy want to faint more often."
I stared at the runt. He had missed the point of my lecture. He had missed the point of every lecture in the entire world. Lectures were wasted on such a brickhead. At that very moment, I heard a woman scream in the kitchen.
"Ah!"
Well, you know me. When it comes to protecting women and children, I get very serious. And before I could even think about it, I leaped up from the hearth and made a dash for the kitchen. As you might have surmised, the scream had come from Miss Viola, seeing as how she was the only... Miss Viola had screamed. That much was clear. What wasn't so clear, and what I had to determine right away, was what had caused her to scream. Slim was standing over the stove, taking up the weenies with a fork. When he heard the scream, he dropped the fork and whirled around.
"Why, Miss Viola, what's wrong?"
She held her hand up to her mouth, and her eyes were wide with fear.
Oh, I thought I saw a mouse.
Slim swallowed, and that thing on his neck, Adam's apple, I guess you call it, jumped up and down. A mouse? Why, that don't seem right. We'd never... Hank, you stay in here and watch. We may have a mouse in here. We may have a mouse in here? Fellers, I'd spent a good part of the morning herding mice in that place, and I had reason to suspect that Slim wasn't telling... Oh, well, I just work here. I sat down beside Miss Viola and concentrated on protecting her life from a mouse, so to speak. Old Slim had turned his back on the food, and by the time he got himself turned around again, everything on the stove was either boiling over or on fire. You never saw such smoke. Blue smoke, gray smoke, white smoke. He shut off the burners and opened the back door and fanned the air with his hands. Got a little smoky in here. I think he was the one who said it. It was hard to tell since we couldn't see the top half of his body. I glanced up at Miss Viola. She had kind of a cement smile on her mouth, and she coughed into her hand. Slim took up the weenies on a plate and put the plate in the middle of the table. While he was dumping the can of beans into a bowl, Miss Viola leaned over and studied the weenies. They did look a little strange. Something black and red and yeller, with smoke still curling up from them.
What is that?
That's cowboy round steak, one of my best recipes.
No, I mean that.
Slim's eyes followed her finger. He leaned over and stared at the plate.
Is it a roach?
Oh, no, it's not a roach. A cricket, maybe. He picked it off the plate and pitched it out the door. Must have hopped into my grease. I save my grease and sometimes... It's all right now. Let's eat. They sat down and bowed their heads, and Slim asked Miss Viola to say the blessing.
And Lord, help us through our times of testing, for thou knowest that we're not as strong as we need to be. Help us to find order in chaos. Help us to find the good in all things. Bless this food to the nourishment of our bodies, and we'll give thee the praise. Amen.
Amen, said Slim as he shook out his napkin and spread it across his lap. Well, dig in, Miss Viola. We got meat, beans, and bread. Who could want more? She smiled and took small helpings of weenies and beans. Now we've got plenty, so don't be bashful. Miss Viola had a little trouble cutting her weenie with the fork, so she sawed off a piece with her knife.
Oh, Slim, did you do that drawing on the wall?
Slim turned around and looked, and suddenly, huh? Say, this was very strange. All at once, Miss Viola was holding a weenie in front of my nose. Well, I ate it, of course. No, that's my Ace Reed calendar. They give them out at the feed store.
Oh, of course, I see now.
Say, you're out of round steak. Have some more. He rolled another weenie onto her plate. She thanked him and sawed off a chunk.
But Slim, isn't that calendar out of date?
He turned around again and another weenie in front of my nose? By gollies, you're right. These years come and go, don't they? It's kind of hard for a guy to keep up. I ate the weenie. Sure had a load of garlic in it. No sooner had I swallowed the weenie than there was a piece of bread in front of my nose. Well, heck, I woofed it down, and Miss Viola gave me a good patting behind the ears. Slim glared at me and then set his knife and fork down on the table. Hank, I think it's time for you dogs to go outside. How can a poor lady enjoy her supper with you hanging around and begging for food? Come on, Drover, you too. Little Drover came padding around the corner. He was wearing his usual simple grin and blinking the sleep out of his eyes. Slim opened the back door and pointed out into the darkness. As I was leaving, I glanced back at Miss Viola. Unless my eyes played tricks on me, I saw her wrap up the rest of her weenie in a napkin and slip it into her purse. She was a mighty nice lady, but she sure had some strange eating habits. Very strange.
The door slammed behind us, and we found ourselves outside in the darkness and the cold. Drover began shivering and moaning and looking up at the cloudy sky.
Hank, I sure wish we could have stayed inside, don't you? It seems awful spooky out here.
All things come to an end, Drover. And as for the spookiness of the situation, it was kind of spooky, to tell you the truth. For one thing, I didn't know my way around Slim's place. I'd never spent much time down there, don't you see? And I wasn't too familiar with the way it was laid out. For another thing, the wind was moaning in the tops of the trees. I never did care much for a moaning wind. Gives me the jitters. And then another thing. I remembered the singing I'd heard the night before. Now, I was something of a singer myself, and I'd been known to belt out a few songs after dark. But let me tell you something. When I hear music in the night, I like to know where it's coming from. If it's coming from nowhere, I get suspicious. Also a little nervous. Scared. Don't get me wrong, I wasn't the kind of dog who believed in ghosts and goblins and such things, but it was a spooky night. Don't let it bother you, Drover. This is just another night, one of many this old world has... What was that?
What?
I thought I heard something, a banging sound. Did you make a banging sound? He rolled his eyes around.
I don't think so, unless it was my heart. It's kind of banging around.
No, this was something else. We listened, and there it was again, a banging sound. Drover, I think we'd better check this thing out. Something strange is going on around here.
Maybe it would be better if we stayed on the porch.
No, that's a bad idea. Do you want to know why?
Not really.
If we stayed on the porch, Drover, we'd be running away from our fears. We'd never learn what it was that caused us to be afraid.
Yeah, that's what I like about it.
Where's your curiosity, your sense of adventure? Don't you want to plumb the mysteries of the great unknown?
I never was much of a plumber.
Very well, if you insist on being a scaredy cat and a chicken liver, I'll go by myself. I'll take all the chances and then I'll take all the credit while you go to the porch and hide from every little sound in the night. Is that what you want, Drover? Is that the way you want to conduct your life? You're old enough now to make your own decisions. The choice is yours.
I think I'll go to the porch.
Oh, no, you won't. You're going with me.
But I thought...
The choice is yours unless you make the wrong choice. I can't allow you to make dumb decisions. Come on, let's move out. We went creeping through the darkness towards the sound of whatever it was that was banging. It was pretty tense there for a while, but the mission turned out to be a big success. We discovered that the door of the cake house had come unlatched, and it was banging in the wind. There, you see? It was nothing to be afraid of. But if I had let you go to the porch, you'd still be up there shivering and imagining all kinds of crazy... Suddenly, I heard something else. A new sound. It was coming from a grove of bodark trees a short distance away. Drover... Did you hear voices? Unless I'm seriously mistaken, someone is lurking over in those trees.
Hank, is this Halloween night?
No, we don't observe Halloween.
Am I old enough to make a decision yet?
I suppose we can talk about it. How old are you now, Drover?
Well, I'm not sure. That depends on when I was born.
That's correct. And when were you born?
That's the part I'm not sure about. I think I was there, but I don't remember much about it.
You think you were there, but you don't remember much about it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, my early years are kind of hazy.
Were there any witnesses to this alleged event?
Well, let's see. My brothers and sisters were there, and so was my ma.
None of whom is available to testify in your behalf. Is that correct?
I guess so.
In other words, we have no proof whatsoever that you were born. We still have no date of birth, and hence no age. I'd say your case looks pretty weak, Drover.
Can you remember when you were born?
Why do you ask?
Well, if you can't remember when you were born, Then how do we know you're old enough to make a decision about whether I'm old enough to make a decision?
Grover, the answer to that is so obvious that I won't even bother to say it.
It is?
Yes.
Well, what is it?
You really don't know? Do I have to spell it out for you?
No, just say it.
Very well. I'll say it one time, and I'll expect you to remember it.
Okay, I'm ready.
The answer is... shut up.
Oh.
And quit asking moronic questions in the middle of an important investigation.
What's a moronic question?
The question you just asked is an example of a moronic question, and I forbid you to ask any more.
How can I find out what moronic means?
You can't. Now, I think we've settled the matter about your authority to make decisions, and once again, you've proved yourself unfit and irresponsible. I'm sorry, Drover, but I have no choice but to make the decisions for both of us.
How can you make a decision if you've got no choice?
Exactly. And always remember, Drover, I'm doing this for your own good.
Does that mean that we can't go home?
That's correct.
Could we go back to the porch?
No. Any more questions before we launch our investigation of the mysterious voices in the trees?
I'm scared.
That's not a question.
Yeah, but it's true, and I want to go home.
The truth, Drover, is that you were born scared.
I still don't remember a thing about it.
And you'll just have to learn to live with it. All right, let's move out. We've got a job to do. And with that, we went creeping into the darkness, towards the grove of trees from whence the mysterious voices had come. To find out what it was, you'll have to keep listening.